Word on Today FM.
John Gibbons has just come into the studio for the last word on the environment, and he's been giving out to me about the heat on the dart. And you said we're not actually ready, are we, for warmer temperatures in many respects?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I think that's very much the case. We're sort of watching the dial in Europe, you know, hitting 40 degrees centigrade and all the rest, and just being thankful, I suppose, particularly with our infrastructure here, that it's over there and not over here. I think that's really the case, although we're seeing temperatures already in the UK next door hitting about 35 degrees, so which is pretty worrying. It is clearly the case that we are not set up in Ireland. I think the critical...
Sorry, we're not set up with things like, you know, public transport having air conditioning. Yeah. Things, a lot of buildings not having suitable air conditioning. And yet, while we're basking in lovely warm weather at present in the mid-20s, that's way below what is happening in continental Europe at present. And they're struggling, even though a lot of their buildings are designed for that type of higher temperatures, aren't they?
Well, to some extent. I mean, for example, in Northern Europe, say Paris, and draw a line straight across from Paris, traditionally they had no air conditioning whatsoever. And so we had the big, if you remember the big heat wave of 2003, summer 2003, there was, I think, 70,000 excess deaths across Europe, many of them among elderly people who essentially, they ended up being stored in refrigerated units. There were so many deaths because they were living in apartments that didn't have air conditioning, and by the time they were discovered, they had simply died from heat exposure. Think about heat; they describe it as a silent killer. It affects if you can't. Okay, if you're exposed to high temperatures during the day, I think we're all familiar with the experience. You it puts a strain on your cardiac system, your respiratory system. You can feel those symptoms. You'll feel fatigued, you'll feel tired, you'll feel listless. That's the classic symptoms of heat stress. And if that stress accelerates, Matt, you're heading into heat stroke. At heat stroke, essentially, you've got your organs begin to fail. That's extremely dangerous, as the name suggests. Now, the issue normally is, for a healthy person, if your body gets a chance to recover at night, if the temperatures drop back down to below, say, 20 degrees at night, then your body gets a chance to recover and you sort of, I suppose, you're set again for the next day. The real danger, the real issue, especially with the vulnerable, which we mean either people with underlying conditions, the elderly or young children, is that high nighttime temperatures cause people to struggle. And this is a particular, to go back to where we started, in Ireland we have an awful lot of housing stock that is really badly insulated. Now, when I say insulated, immediately people think insulation is about keeping in the heat. Yes, it is. But the other thing that insulation is really good at is keeping out the heat. So a well-insulated building, whether it's an office or a home that has good high levels of insulation, will obviously retain heat during the winter, which is important in Ireland, but it will equally prevent that house from overheating during the summer. And a big part of the problem that we have in Ireland and in Britain and in parts of Northern Europe is that our housing has been designed to withstand the cold. It has not been proofed against the heat. I'll give you a small example. We have heat pumps, which are excellent, and as you know, we've talked about those many times. Now, a heat pump could be reversed, if you like, to actually provide cold air. But the heat pumps that are being sold and installed in Ireland are only about heating. But effectively, they're also air conditioning units. So the blast of cold air that comes out the back of a heat pump could be directed back into your house. So you could run a heat pump in high summer and have it blasting air conditioning into your house. Now, we haven't thought of that here because we work on the assumption that high temperatures in Ireland are an anomaly, that it's something we get 25 degrees in Ireland is the official threshold for a heat wave, but we always assume, and we have always assumed, that they're sort of pleasant, transient experiences. What we're really seeing is, because of the underlying climate signal, what used to be the pleasant, transient experience is becoming potentially the very unpleasant, dangerous experience.
Okay, you've got details of a study which has been conducted by scientists across Europe who suggested that what's been happening in recent weeks is about 4% hotter because of climate change.
Yeah, this is a study that looked at the performance across a whole bunch of European cities. And what they found is that the heat waves, in the absence of the climate signal, would have been between 2 and 4 degrees cooler. And now that's an enormous difference. Now, to translate that into human mortality figures, they estimated that in the period between June the 23rd and July the 2nd, that's just over a week, Matt, we had an additional 2,300 deaths due to the heatwave conditions. Now, Some of those would have happened anyway. But their estimate from that study was that 1,500 people died who would not have died without the underlying climate. So it isn't that people have never died in heatwave conditions. The issue really is that the additional temperature, people are approaching what are called physical thresholds. That means you're doing fine up to this level, but push it on another 2, 3, 4 degrees and people start to die.
Listener says, can you please ask John what caused the heat wave in 2003? Well, I would assume it was the same climate change that we're experiencing now because we've been burning fossil fuels for well over a century.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. That's entirely correct. In fact, I was caught on the tail end of that particular heat wave in France. In fact, we just got out before it really bit. And yeah, I mean, we've been burning, as you say, fossil fuels since the mid-19th century. Now, we've really gone gangbusters since about 1950. So I can assure your listener there was plenty of climate changing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere in 2003. And again, there were attribution studies that were done that looked at that particular heat wave in 2003, and they concluded that it was a so-called once in a century heat wave. But of course, that even the terminology once in a century doesn't mean anything. That only works against a stable background.
When we had Marion and Cal with us the other night, we were talking about the tragic loss of life in Texas because of the flash flooding over the weekend. And, you know, they were relating that it's not the first time we've had flash floods in Texas, but the intensity of this one and the amount of rain that fell in such a short period of time exceeded what has happened on a number of occasions in recent decades. And one of the main predictions of climate science, isn't it, that intense rain events are going to become more intense.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I heard that report that you did with Marion and Cal, and I think the number was mentioned in that when you add 1 degree centigrade to global average surface temperatures, you increase the carrying capacity of the atmosphere for moisture by 7%, which is absolutely enormous. And remember, Matt, we're on the way now to 1.5, so we're carrying almost 10%, one-tenth more moisture. But not only that, we also know that because of climate change, the patterns of weather are changing as well. We're seeing, for example, these heat domes. We're seeing these stalled weather events. And to go back to the Texas disaster, absolutely not the first time this has happened. But what was exceptional about it, the area where it fell is called Kerr County. They estimate that 100 billion gallons of water fell over a 24-hour period. Now, translate that into litres, you're looking at a quarter of a trillion litres in 24 hours. Now, somebody calculated, Matt, that that's the equivalent of the amount of water that flows over the Niagara Falls in a 24-hour period being dumped on a small county. So nothing can prepare for that. However, having said that, it would be good to have a functioning weather service. And as we know, the Trump regime have taken an axe to the weather service. They've in their political targeting of science, they've gone after the National Weather Service, which has seen its staff cut by 40%, which has meant, for example, that the Weather Service, among the many things that they do, they release weather balloons into various systems to track, for example, hurricanes, to track tornadoes, and so on. And these weather balloons go right up into storm systems, and they give them vital information. Now, because of that, loads of these weather balloons have simply been grounded because they don't have the staff and they don't have the budget. It is a very strange thing for a regime to actually target weather and meteorological services. I kind of get the whole, you know, climate kind of anti-climate thing that they've got going on. But to target meteorology, which leads to people dying, is breathtaking.
Let's hear a little bit of somebody else. Let's hear from NBC in the United States, a Democratic senator called Sheldon Whitehouse, predicting a major financial crisis to be sparked by the effects of climate change.
All across America, in wildfire country and along our coasts, those notices are coming through the mail slot. Notices of non-renewal. You're fired by your insurance company. Good luck getting new insurance. Your rates have doubled. Your rates have tripled. We're having a true homeowners insurance crisis. That is the leading edge of the climate threat that's coming at us.
Are we talking bigger than 2008 potentially?
I will tell you that the chief economist for the insurance giant Freddie Mac said that just the coastal insurance risk problem was likely to cascade into a mortgage problem, a real estate values problem. Since then, the wildfire risk evil twin has raised its head as well. So yeah, it's 2008 or worse.
Because people who are looking to buy houses, either new or secondhand, won't be able to get mortgage protection insurance. and therefore the market collapses.
That's a part of it, Matt. But let's say, for example, that you're a developer and you want to develop a residential scheme, or you want to develop a commercial scheme. The first thing you've got to do when you go to the banks with your proposal to draw down 50 or 100 million dollars to develop your scheme is, they'll say, sure, show us your insurance policy. And if you haven't got that, that whole system grinds to a halt. I mean, the insurance can be thought of as the sort of the blood of the global financial system. It keeps the whole thing moving. Without insurance, you can't do anything. I mean, we think of it like no bank will lend you, you know, 200,000 euros to buy a house, or 500,000 or whatever it is that you borrow, unless you've got insurance on that house, because their protection of their loan is the physical asset. And if that asset is at risk of being destroyed and you haven't got an insurance policy, well, then kaput. And I would say as well, and obviously Sheldon Whitehouse has been a lone voice in the US on this, but he's certainly not a lone voice in the insurance industry. I'll give you another one, if I may. This is a guy called Gunther Salinger. He's a board member of Allianz, which is one of the world's biggest insurance companies. And he said recently, he said, we're fast approaching temperature levels between 1.5, 2 degrees, 3 degrees centigrade, where insurers will no longer be able to offer coverage for many of these risks. The maths break down. The premiums required exceed what people or companies can pay. And he said entire regions are becoming uninsurable. And he went on to say that we're looking at a climate-induced credit crunch and a market failure to a point at global temperatures of 3 degrees and above, where, as he said, quote, capitalism as we know it ceases to be viable. And this might sound alarmist, but he did have a punchline, Matt, and his punchline was, he said, what's the solution to this? And he said the only solution to this is to stop burning stuff now. He said if we persist with burning stuff, this is going to happen.
Okay, just to finish, slightly tangential, but you have spoken to us a lot about modern motor cars in recent times. You particularly don't like the SUVs, but you're particularly now exercised by what you describe as oversized in-car screens on modern cars.
Yeah, I encountered this myself with a Tesla some years back, and it's a strange thing to have this gigantic 19-inch screen sitting right in the middle of you. And initially,
but it's an electric car, so isn't that all right?
Yeah, isn't it cool? Wow, it's amazing. And of course, your first reaction is, gee whiz, it's cool. But this is getting ridiculous. Let me give an example. Mercedes, the latest S-Class Mercedes, has what they call a hyperscreen, Matt. It's 56 inches wide. It is the width of the car, right? This is all singing, all dancing. And essentially, what studies have found with these is that the impairment, the reaction impairment, in other words, the degree to which people are being distracted by trying to operate these touchscreen controls, is the equivalent of being 5 times worse than the impairment of a drunk driver, and 3 times worse than somebody who's high on cannabis. So they're having a huge detrimental effect. And I can testify to this. I had to learn to train myself to ignore the screen. Now, luckily on the Tesla, there are plenty of controls on the knobs, things like the lights and indicators and stuff. You can get those on the knob. But increasingly, newer cars are going completely screen crazy and putting all the controls on the screen. So if people going down
They're watching the screen rather than looking out the windscreen.
120 kilometres an hour, fiddling around through sub-menus. Now, think quick analogy to this, right? Aircraft. Think of the cockpit of an aircraft. They don't use touchscreens. They use dials and they use switches. And you know why? Because you've got 200 people behind you and they don't want
Do use autopilot, and I think that's, you see, what basically the plan for the car industry is. Everyone will be on automatic autopilot driving, and you'll be just amusing yourself by pushing all the screens.
Well, if you've seen some of the footage recently of Teslas on autopilot as they drive directly over dummies, so I think we probably need to pay attention, and I wouldn't be handing off to Tesla just yet.
John Gibbons, thank you.
The Last Word on Today FM.